It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey everybody, welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. Today, Dr. Sarah Beth Burke Bickerton is going to help ease us into the future that is one of self-employment and the gig economy. And she thinks and believes that by 2030, more than 50% of the population will be working for themselves. Is that correct? Is that the stat that we are predicting here, Dr. Sarah Beth?
Yeah, that's the inflection point people are predicting. By 2030, half the workforce is going to cross the line and be self-employed.
That is wild. So we're going to talk about that today. So Dr. Sarah Beth Burke Bickerton is founder, author, and speaker and professional identity expert. She combines personal branding, career development, and workforce development. Her first book is called More Than My Title. And her new book coming out in September, Seen, Known, and Valued. Sarah Beth, welcome to Great Mondays Radio. Let's talk a little bit about what this transition means. How do you come up with this prediction? Why should we believe you that in the future we are all going to be working for ourselves?
You're coming in real hot. Thanks for having me, Josh. I love this. I can't remember the exact source of this stat, but I know it's somewhere reputable. So you'll just have to trust me on that.
We do. We have a lot of cred here. That's fine.
Lots of street cred here. I mean, we know there are so many things going on in the world of work, AI being one of the most front and centered. Supposedly it's taking jobs or transforming jobs. Mm-hmm. We know that companies are creating less roles or people are staying in roles longer. So there's less turnover. Going up the career ladder is harder. So essentially, there's this huge force that's happening mostly to knowledge workers in our economy where it's harder to find white-collar jobs. And so if people are going to make ends meet, they have to go out and sell themselves. And what's happening is we're so saturated in the workforce with people that have the same title. I bet you could throw a dart and hit 100 people that are coaches or designers or strategists or problem solvers. Like there's just too much of the same language that we're all using to describe ourselves. So I truly believe part of the new world of work is that we have to decide and define who we are in whatever we do that we call our work. And we have to explain how we're more than just a job title. And that's what I help people do is define their authentic professional identity and then explain why it's unique and why it matters.
That's so interesting. I do remember a point in my career where it's actually, I would say my origin story where I left my last full-time job in 2007, 2008 during the global housing crisis.
Yeah.
And I had a couple offers or tentative offers and then they all got rescinded. And so I was like, well, if there's no job, like there's no job description to apply to, well, then what do I want to do? Right. Like, what am I going to do? And that's how I sort of figured out, you know, where I started going in the culture direction. I kind of put all these pieces together. So I totally get that. And so in this world that we're seeing, we're maybe not slowly starting to see that it is less useful to try to fit ourselves into what is being listed as a job description and more about starting from the outside and defining for ourselves. Do I have this correct?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. The people I work with and the problem, like I also call myself an independent researcher because I study everything that I guide and teach to people. Mm-hmm. And so the problem I've been seeing is a lot of people feel misunderstood. They're like, my boss doesn't get me. Nobody knows what I do. I struggle to explain what I do, especially if I'm a jack of all trades. So these notions of feeling undervalued and unseen and unrecognized are rampant. And it's part of why people leave jobs or go through career transitions. And so the whole notion of trying to find career fit is dead. Career fit works really well. We're fantastic in our society of matching skills to roles and job descriptions, like you just said. But once you're fit into a role or into a career because you've got the right skill set and qualifications, it doesn't mean you feel seen or understood or recognized and valued for who you are. You feel like you've just been pigeonholed. So that's the new chapter and the new frontier. People are looking for more from their work than being another peg in a hole.
It's interesting that you say this because it does feel like previously, maybe if we divide time into, you know, sort of pre this conversation or pre, you know, Sarah Beth and post of this moment, pre is sort of, I find, you know, common American worker, find value in being endowed with a title or a credential. Right. I went to business school and have an MBA. I am a CPA. I am a, you know, financial advisor, whatever it is. It's like there were things that you then could do. I tell this story that my dad was told he could be, there's one of three things you could be: a doctor, lawyer, or an accountant. Right. Like those are the things, right? Those are the three things. But there has this lack of being seen, I'm observing, is this, hey, I got to this place, or I never got to this place. And does that mean I'm not valued? And so we're at this watershed moment where it's actually more and more people are trying to define themselves in ways that aren't common, aren't predefined.
Yes. And we live in a world where jobs of tomorrow don't exist today. And then people get multiple degrees and have really non-linear backgrounds with expertise ranging from yoga instructor to real estate developer to graphic designer and life coach. And you're like, how does that all belong in one person? You don't make sense.
Right. But
that's the norm. And so part of what I've been trying to open up is a dialogue around, why are we stuck in a binary world? Why is everything so black and white? My first book I called More Than My Title because that's what I felt. I'm trapped behind a title that doesn't represent me. And I've got all kinds of credentials. And we live in today in a workforce that's not just experts or generalists. That's the binary lens. There's more. The spectrum I see is singularity, multiplicity, and hybridity. And all three types of those professional identities matter. Singularity tends to be the expert or the subject matter specialist. Multiplicity is when you have a jack of all trades, someone who's a generalist, someone who does a lot of things, but those things are not related. And the hybrid is the interesting one. Think of a Venn diagram. You start to create circles that are intersecting, and the hybrid's working in that emergent place. Like you just said, it defies categorization. We don't know what to call it. But hybridity is happening all around us in the workforce. I could give you thousands of examples, the latest being Moderna, just created the first chief people officer who's also the digital technology officer in one role. We would have never invented that.
I saw this. Yes, I think this is really, I didn't know what to make of it, but I just thought, oh my God, what is this? This is crazy. Right.
And that's hybridity in action.
Yeah.
AI can't predict that, but we have these organic ways that talents are coming together and colliding. And that becomes part of a new business model or new expertise that we didn't even know we needed. These are the topics I study and talk about and then help people realize inside of themselves, because it's so complex. And getting hired or getting seen for your value requires finding language to communicate who we really are. And that's where people get stuck.
Yeah, it is interesting to, my son will be going to college soon. And the question is like, what do we study if the job that we will have doesn't exist today?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the sort of, maybe we need to, it's almost like for two or three decades, it's been, you know, going to STEM, going to computer science, right? And so now we have the computer programmers being replaced by AI. It's almost the very first thing. And there's this, I think my reaction is, well, you go back to studying, you know, the liberal arts, and so that you can have this premise of like, or this foundation of, you know, ideas that you can then bring together into something. And it sounds to me like what you're describing is that kind of next step of like the, what was once almost an insult, right? Where it's like, you went to school, you know, you got your degree in literature, and then you graduate and you have to, whatever the freaking joke is, I can't think of it at the moment. You want fries with that, right?
Where yeah.
Like, what's your thing? But now I feel like that's the opportunity. So you're saying it's your multiplicity. It's all of the things that is going to give you the strength to get the kind of work that you're going to create for yourself.
I'm going to answer with a classic response. It depends. There's value in all three that I don't want to diminish, because I don't want to say we need a workforce of hybrids that's over indexing in the one end of the spectrum.
Okay.
I do think there's a ratio in a place that all three matter, because I've seen high performing teams need the singularity, the multiplicity, and the hybrid in the room together. But I think what I'm hearing you say, there's something about process expertise versus subject matter expertise. And I see this a lot. There's a lot of process experts out there, and some might say this is the soft skills. They're great communicators or people persons or relationship builders. The skills of the future that AI still can't take over are things like creativity and storytelling and thinking very strategically. Like, AI is a great data synthesizer, but it doesn't know why you're putting that data together. It doesn't know what you're trying to really achieve. You have to tell it what the goals are and why. So no matter what your student studies, the thought process, the cognition, that critical thinking is going to be required.
So your first book was How to Think About Bringing These Together. And yeah, if you're on YouTube, you can see Sarah Beth holding that up.
I'm doing the Vanna White.
Yes, exactly. Go to YouTube and check out this episode. So what then inspired a second book, Seen, Known, Valued?
I think I'm just crazy, Josh. Who wants to write another book?
Not me. I certainly didn't. I mean, people always are, you going to write another book? No, absolutely not. So yes, yeah. Please.
So to give a little backstory, my first book was born out of my own problem, which I now call a professional identity crisis. I had lost a sense of who I was. When people said, Sarah Beth, what do you do? I was back in grad school and I was trying to move on from the identity, excuse me, of being an art teacher. I was like, that's old me. I'm in grad school because I want to be seen as a leader and transform educational spaces and such. But during that time, I was like, what am I trying to become next? I don't want to be a professor. I'm not trying to become a principal. And so I really started to take an inventory of all of my professional identities. And when I looked at the ones that were my best and brightest, they lit me up. I felt the strongest and most knowledgeable in. I realized I'm an artist, I'm an educator, I'm a researcher, and I'm a designer. When I get to use those identities, I flourish. But most of my jobs compartmentalized me. I could only use one identity at a time. Hey, Sarah Beth, we're hiring you to teach. Great. And so I would feel cut off from myself. And over time, I would change jobs and course correct and go towards the artist or go towards the researcher. I never knew how to blend them. But one day during my dissertation work, because that's what I started studying, is who am I at the intersection of my multiple professional identities? Can I even be allowed to combine my identities together? And the answer is yes. And that's when I came up with this language of being a hybrid professional, because I work at the intersection of being an artist, educator, researcher, and designer. That aha was the greatest insight of my life. And when I started expressing this to other people, both just colleagues or people I was running into networking, first of all, they nodded their head in response going, oh my God, this is me too. I didn't know there was language for this, but I'm also a hybrid. That's how I wear so many hats in my work. And so I noticed there was a lot of resonance and people needed to hear this idea. So that's why I wrote the first book. What does it mean to be a hybrid professional? And then when I started helping people more and more identify what their hybridity was, give it language, discover it, define it, they went, this is great. You've helped me realize who I am in my work. But now where do I fit in the workforce if I'm, say, a tension methodologist or an opportunity translator? Those were some of the titles people came up with. And I went, gosh, I don't know. I mean, I think it's just about how you pitch it or how you translate it, which wasn't bad information, but it was half the equation. So once you start having a question that keeps you up at night, like, how do I explain where I fit in the workforce? Suddenly you're off on a new research project. And the project landed into this idea of career belonging. So my new book, Seen, Known, Valued, is how to achieve career belonging in a workforce obsessed with fit. Because we are actually not trying to find where we want to fit in the workforce. People don't want to fit in. Fitting in is being who other people want you to be. It literally means you have to match criteria and that's it. Whereas belonging is about being accepted for who you are no matter what. That's what we're all yearning for, is to find a space in our career where we're seen and known and valued by ourselves, others, and something bigger than us. And then here's the kicker. None of us know how to express, how do we want to be seen? How do we want to be known? How do we want to be valued?
Yeah.
That's when the question gets reflected back. You go, I've never asked myself that before. So that's why I wrote my next book.
Do you have, maybe this is a query for book three, but how do you connect that to getting that job? I mean, well, I guess maybe actually as I'm asking that, it's sort of the wrong question, right? Because we started this by saying you're going to be doing all sorts of things for yourself, you know, or at least a lot of people are. So am I, as a hybrid, one of these kind of hybrid workers, hypothetically speaking, looking like, can I look for work where the job, where the role is posted? Because I don't think companies are there yet.
Yeah.
I mean, we recently had a conversation on the podcast just a couple episodes ago around throwing away kind of the job description and looking for that kind of value, and how to, you know, personas is really kind of where we headed, job personas. What is your experience with that? How do I give up entirely on the things that are already posted?
I've got a both and answer for you because I think through all of this.
Yes.
I work with people primarily going through career transitions. Some of them are employed and they're looking for another job with an employer, or they're trying to get a promotion or something within a company. And other people I work with are working on their own, or they're trying to figure out how to build their own consulting business. And both sides of the equation need this support. So no matter if you're going for the job, we'll start with that part of the answer. And you have to kind of know a space you're looking in. Let's say it's project management or marketing, but you still need to know what kind of project manager you are, what kind of marketer you are, because if you can't tell your special sauce, you sound like everybody else out there. And so being able to differentiate and understand, I'm an opportunity translator. That's how I do marketing. So I teach people to do a double intro where they use the traditional job title, I'm a marketer, but I call myself a opportunity translator because, and then they give the value prop. That little framework is one of the ways you start to distinguish yourself. And I'll also add this, how many times in a job interview have you been asked the question, tell us about yourself? How do you see yourself? What, you know, who are you, essentially, is what they're asking. And if you answer with the basic boring, I'm a project manager, or I've been doing sales for 20 years, or I solve problems to help people blank, it's not a great answer.
Yeah.
So instead, if you start with your professional identity, which is how you see yourself in your work, it's not a job title. You start with, well, actually, I see myself as an opportunity translator. For 20 years, I've been helping clients and businesses, blah, blah, blah. Wow. Does that reshape and reframe? You sound clear. You have strong self-awareness and you have something to offer that other people don't. I've seen my clients do this and they said the heads in the room start nodding, just like yours was. They go, whoa, that's actually what we need in the role. We need the opportunity translator, not just the general marketer. That same kind of language and framework works when you work for yourself as well. Because if people are looking to hire another coach or another marketer, and you're out in the gig economy, you still have to show your competitive advantage. What makes you different? Why do you stand out? And if you just sound like everybody else, you're not memorable and you're not referable. But it's like, hey, I worked with this woman. She's a marketer, but she's really this opportunity translator. She's so great at seeing the thing no one else saw and blah, blah, blah. That becomes sticky. That becomes your brand. So your professional identity is what you lead with. And then your personal brand is how you activate it. It's what people know you for.
Yeah. So clarifying. It really, you're just like, oh my God, of course. Right. Like when you're saying that, I'm like, of course. Right. Like that helps so dramatically position yourself, and you've got this category, and then you've got your unique position, and then you go to your proof points.
Yeah.
It's a classic kind of brand messaging architecture. And I didn't realize it until you just described it that way.
Thanks.
Career belonging. Let's talk a little bit more about that, because to me, this scene piece is, and I'll refer back to another episode we did this year with Zach Mercurio, who's also a researcher.
I know him. Yeah.
Zach. Yeah. He's amazing. His new book's incredible. And yeah. He talks about belonging. He talks about being seen. Let's discuss a little bit more about kind of the, how that belonging or that being seen is, I feel, a very critical component of one's perception of oneself, like the just kind of almost happiness.
Yeah.
In oneself.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Plus one to Zach's book, Power of Mattering. I'll give a shout out. I met Zach at a conference, and I just like, we resonated so deeply with each other's research.
Mind blown. Yeah.
Mind blown. And Zach and I had a really healthy debate, like the difference between mattering and belonging, which I won't get into here, but we're sharing a lot of language and yet have slightly different ways we're using it. So I need to be careful when I use the word belonging, because I think the traditional definition is being part of a group. You belong to a group. And that definition works, but it's not the full idea of belonging. Belonging is being accepted. And when I look at the pillars of what belonging consists of, that's how I landed with the language of seen, known, valued. You could add the words recognized, connected, and accepted, but I think the headline is, when you feel seen, known, and valued, you belong. And when I was studying this, I also found another part of belonging, which was hidden to me. This was another unlock. There are three levels of belonging. You can belong to self, you can belong to others, and you can belong to something greater than yourself. And that was an aha, because when I put the word career next to the word belonging, and I go, wait a second, my career belongs to me, my career is reflected by others, and my career is part of something greater than me. I've never thought on those three levels before. Any career coach or book about career development I've ever read just talks about your career generally. It never helped me understand my ownership and my agency, and then also how it's connected to others and something bigger. So my new book has this career belonging matrix, and that's really the heart and soul of the book. First, helping people define what does seen, known, and valued even mean to you? And second, how do you want to be seen, known, and valued on these three levels, to yourself, others, and something bigger? That's a 3x3 matrix, and it's 9 sets of questions that I promise you've never asked yourself before, because nobody's asking us these, and yet they are exactly what we crave. We're like, we want to feel this, but in order for us to experience it in the world, we have to start making this conscious and checking in with ourselves and start coming up with our own answers, so that we can express it to others, so that we can ask for what we need in our careers.
Understanding ourselves so others can understand us better.
Yeah, because right now we're making assumptions. Well, people don't see me. They just don't get me. And it's like, but do you get yourself first?
Yeah.
I say a mantra all the time, which is, until you see yourself, others won't see you the way you want to be seen.
Yeah. Right. How do you want to be seen? I think that's ultimately a self-discovery question, and that's kind of where you started your journey, right? It's like
Yes.
this idea of my title, and I think this whole conversation can be illuminated through this tension that I have heard over the past, I don't know, 10 years, where it's like you introduce yourself and you introduce yourself by your work, or I'll be at a conference and it's like, introduce yourself, but don't, you can't use the constraint. You can't use your job title to introduce
Yeah.
yourself. And it, to me, it get your, and it, I always felt like, okay, I get the point of what you're doing and that's fine. I'll play the game, but that is part of who I am. Because of how passionate I feel about that, right? And so what I think that what you have uncovered here is that the tension that I felt around that, and it's like, well, okay, I get it, and why not? And it's boring, and tell me, you know, how do you get to something deeper? And so to me, you're sort of bringing those things together, your deeper self and the work that you do.
Yeah.
Do any of your clients take this forward or take this idea and use it in a way that isn't just for, and if we define a job or a career as making money, it's not just for, you know, exchanging your time for money. Is there, you know, have you seen others kind of go, oh, I know I need to do this as well?
That's a great question. I like to even pull the lens back on what is our work? What is a career today? I did a lot of focus groups and I would ask people, how do you define a career? And they said, we need to abolish that word. It doesn't have the same relevance and nobody has a better word for it. Unfortunately, like your life's work maybe is the best I've come to. But I believe your career is the experiences you do across your lifetime that you consider to be your work, whatever that is. And so that's why, you know, I babysat in my 20s and I was a ski instructor for a moment and those were fun, but they weren't part of my career. And so you get to cherry pick what your story of your career is. And it's a constellation. I don't know anyone that's had a linear career anymore. Like that myth is over. And so this idea of getting paid or not being paid, like there's plenty of people that are volunteering or doing caretaking work, doing things in their community that they'll never get paid for, but they get recognized and they get value from it. And so it means something for them in a work sense.
Yeah. That's great. great response. Great answer. I think, you know, my question is more of a leading question. That's my experience of it as
yeah.
well, of like you, when you identify this thing, it's like, oh, I have to, these are the things I'm going to do. And I'm going to do things that aren't directly connected to a salary per se.
Yeah.
And I think that's really compelling.
You know, just to segue on that for a second, another idea, the new book, Seen, Known, Valued, has so many new ideas for the career world that I'm excited to bring out. Like I just named a bunch of structures and ideas that I felt were missing. And one is the notion of a little C versus a big C career.
Wow.
We've talked about little T, big T trauma, and little C, big C creativity. But I think the same idea exists within careers that we've enmeshed two ideas into one. And so most people are following a traditional little C career that's externally driven and defined. It's about salary and benefits and title and making money. But what is your big C career? Have you ever stopped to define that? And it's different for everyone, but it can be about things that fill you up or are more about your various skills and, you know, giving you purpose and less about how am I getting the next raise?
Yeah. I think that's great. All right. Well, there's so many more things that we could talk about, but I think we're going to leave it there. Dr. Sarah Beth Burke Bickerton, her books are More Than My Title and coming out in September, Seen, Known, and Valued. You can follow her along, I presume, on LinkedIn.
Definitely.
And you will announce when the book is available for pre-order, which is what we want to get folks to do is pre-order it. But you can also check her out on morethanmytitle.com. It was wonderful to have you on. Thank you for helping me, you know, sort of expand my brain and my thinking around this. And I'm very much looking forward to the new book. It sounds like the exact right thing at the exact right time.
Oh, this was a blast, Josh. Loved our conversation. Hope to do it again sometime.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays, and you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.